The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is produced by KFUO Radio, and for more than 100 years, KFUO Radio has been a faithful companion in Christ, a steady voice of teaching, comfort, and truth in a noisy world. Share-a-thon is happening April 30th through May 2nd, and we're celebrating the ministry God continues to sustain through listeners like you. Join us for 3 days of gratitude, stories, and opportunities to give. Learn more or give now at kfuo.org. Listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
We have a series that I hear is going to be a whole lot of fermented fun because
Yes. It
is about fermented fun, isn't it, Erin?
That is what it is about.
How did this idea happen in your head to have a series about fermented things?
I'll tell you. So a while back this winter, I saw a post in the lounge, in the Facebook group, Donna Snow was asking, she was like, I've never made my own sauerkraut before. Does anyone know how to do it? And I was suddenly struck with the realization that I also have never made my own sauerkraut before. And I wanted to. Uh-huh. I should make sauerkraut. But then I thought about it, I was like, when I did like a little bit of research, I realized this has some legs. I think this is more than a single episode. I think this is we need to discuss fermented foods.
Yeah.
And some adventures in fermented foods. And so today we are going to discuss sauerkraut, the introduction to fermented foods. And honestly, it's an introduction that is an easy entry point for anyone to make into fermented foods.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I, as sometimes happens with my various hobbies and interests, I get a fascination with something, and then it turns out all I want to do is learn about it. I don't want to actually do it.
You
know? So it turns out that sometime in the past, I also had been interested in fermenting. And so I had acquired this tome.
Oh my goodness.
It's a 400, almost 500 page book called The Art of Fermentation.
That is amazing.
So when I went to do this again, I was like, oh, that's right. I have been interested in this in the past.
Erin, I own many books, but I do not own that book.
That is hilarious.
And so
that's a beautiful book.
I pulled it out and I looked through it. I'm like, oh, yes, this is going to be a great resource for this series. And so it's a high level introduction to all aspects of fermented foods, not just fermented vegetables. It covers fermented dairy, fermented grains and beans, even fermented meat, which is actually where you get things like salami. It's essentially preserved. Oh. Fermentation. Okay. So fermentation is essentially a preservation approach to food. And so I'm going to give you a few little snippets from this book because it's very interesting history as well. One piece that he points out, which is fascinating, is that fermentation preserves vegetables for the longest. They're good for the longest time when they're fermented in precisely the locations where the growing season is shortest.
Oh.
And preserved vegetables are therefore the most important. So in hotter places, fermentation, like, they don't last as long. Things, they basically over ferment. They shoot past that and they start becoming mushy. But in colder climates, you can keep ferments a long time. Huh. It's amazing the way
that is so interesting.
The way that works.
Yeah. Wow.
Another piece of fermentation trivia that I don't know. I didn't realize that canning is relatively new technology. I didn't realize that canned food, it wasn't invented until the early 19th century.
Hmm.
So it's only it's only a little older than 200 years. And before that, everything was just fermentation or drying, but canning was not an option. And canning and fermenting, they both aim at preserving food, but they go at it essentially in the exact opposite way.
Oh.
Canning is, let's preserve this by sterilizing the food so that nothing living can survive. And so we're gonna put it into a super high heat, kill everything, and that will preserve it. And it does preserve it, and it preserves it well for, you know, you can keep canned food almost indefinitely.
Yeah.
Very long time, longer than you can keep fermented food.
Yeah.
And fermentation, on the other hand, takes the approach of, let us try and foster the good bacteria to the extent that they are so healthy that they like crowd out all of the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows the food to remain healthy for longer. So we're like trying to keep the stuff alive. So they are two totally polar opposite approaches to preserving food.
I had no idea that that's what I was going to learn today.
Yeah. We needed a baseline.
That is so interesting.
It is.
I have just never thought about canned and fermented food.
I don't know. I thought that they went further back than that. But before that, or at least canning safely. Maybe they were canning somewhat before then, but they didn't really realize how essential it is that you have to maintain it at the high temperature for this long of a time in order for it to be consistently safe. So they might have started doing some stuff further back than the early 19th century, but early 19th century in the early 1800s, that's when they really like firmed up the process.
Industrial revolution.
And I knew this random fact because I remember hearing about an Arctic expedition where they all went crazy because they were eating canned foods that had been, this was early in the days, and their canned foods, the cans were sealed with lead.
Yeah, there definitely have been some unhappy things that have happened with canning through the years. You know, botulism.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm still terrified of that.
Yeah. So again, with fermentation, it's taken a totally, totally different approach to preserving food. Also, speaking of the early days, Captain James Cook.
Hey.
He is credited with conquering scurvy, aka vitamin C deficiency, by bringing barrels of sauerkraut with him to sea
and
feeding it to his sailors.
Brilliant. Cabbage is very high in vitamin C, and it's one of the few foods that will grow in very far northern climates that can get you that vitamin C.
Again,
we all love cabbage on this show.
Cabbage. And fermenting it keeps it, allows it to last even longer. Like you can survive on cabbage and rice, even if that's all you have. Like
potatoes are amazing.
Like these are things that can get you through.
Yeah,
through hard times. Now, with fermentation, it is also interesting, like a lot, I'm sure there's cultures out there that aren't doing fermentation, but cultures.
Fermentation joke.
I see what you did there. It took me a moment because I'm not that fast.
I didn't even understand that one. I'm sure there's probably cultures out there that don't have any fermented foods, but it's unusual. Most cultures have come to fermentation at some point. Vegetables in particular, we're leaning on the lactic acid bacteria. Mm. And there's a few different strains that are going to, they're just found naturally on it. You can't, unless you like heat it up to above boiling for 30 minutes or whatever it is, you can't get rid of it. They're just inherent in mm-hmm. the vegetables. And so the food just wants to ferment.
And I think that perhaps the resurgence of interest in fermented foods nowadays is largely due to our increasing understanding and appreciation of good bacteria.
Yeah.
That I feel like, you know, 50 years ago, you hear the word bacteria, everyone assumes, awful, kill it dead. And so the idea of these sterilized canned mm-hmm. foods that guaranteed bacteria-free 100% would have been much more appealing. Nowadays, we're like, I want to tend and nurture my gut microbiome, and maybe I can do that.
Probiotics, exactly. All the biotics.
Yeah, all just bacteria.
Great if you've had to take antibiotics and have basically wiped out a lot of your own body's bacteria culture host.
Your gut biome.
Yes, your gut biome. You can,
I know
you can
a lot
help
about
to help to rebuild it by eating a variety of different fermented foods. Something that is interesting, fermented foods, they often bring the funk. Okay. Mm. They have some funky tastes. That's that's part of what goes with it.
Yeah.
And different cultures are used to eating different funky foods.
Mm-hmm.
And one culture's greatest culinary achievement is sometimes another culture's nightmare.
Mm.
Fermentation is often the thing for each of them. So, for example, cheese. Cheese, I love cheese. I love it. I don't mind this. I'm not super, super into the super smelly, stinky cheeses, but I can go a fair bit into cheese before I hit my limit.
Mm.
Cheese in a lot of Asian cultures, they think it's just the worst smell in the world. And it doesn't smell great, but if you like it, you're like, oh, it does smell funky, but it tastes so good.
Yeah.
And so you're okay with it. You're like, oh, that's fine.
Smells a little like feet, but that's okay because it tastes great.
Right. On the other hand, fermented soybeans, there's a few different varieties in Japan and Taiwan and China that they just smell like hot garbage to me, almost literally. And yet that's because I didn't grow up with that. I didn't learn that. No, this smells funky, but it tastes good. We like this here. So like your parents are like, no, we like it here. This is grown-ups like it. And then you're like, I'm going to learn to like this thing because I want to be like my mom.
Yeah.
Like we don't acquire this, but they're both fermented foods. They both have some strong funk to them.
Yeah.
And each culture is just like, whoa.
Yes. Well, that's interesting. Like I've been raised to love sauerkraut. I do not love kimchi, which is also fermented cabbage, but just different technique.
Yeah.
But one of them is my home culture and the other one is not. Har culture.
Right. Exactly. So as I was doing this research before this, I suddenly realized that I have previously fermented something. I didn't know I was fermenting it, but I remembered the process and I was like, was that a fermented dish? And so then I went and I was like researching further. I'm like, sure enough, it was. So I have previously made this Tunisian spice paste called harissa, but specifically I made a variant of it called Hrous, H-R-O-U-S. And to make Hrus, which I'm pronouncing it that way because I don't know, it makes it sound foreign in my mouth. I don't really know how to pronounce it. To make that, you start by, you have to slice up a bunch of onions and then you salt them heavily, add a little bit of turmeric and cover them and leave them sit for a few days.
That's fermenting.
That's so I got it started with fermenting and I didn't even know it. The recipe didn't mention anything about we're going to start by fermenting these onions. I was just following the recipe. But then once you've done that, then you add these additional spices and peppers to it. And I love it so much. I haven't made a batch for a while, but that was my first foray into fermentation. And I didn't even realize it.
There you go. Amazing.
Yeah. So for this episode, I did make an entry into fermentation. One was successful. One wasn't an utter failure, but I also would not categorize it as a success. Before I get into that, have you ever fermented anything?
Not on purpose.
Yes, I will. I have fermented something, but on purpose and not on purpose. The not on purpose was in my college dorm room and might have involved a Snapple of some sort.
Ah.
Yes. Yep. Turns out if you just leave it in your dorm room for a month, it will ferment. I did not actually sample it after that.
Uh-huh.
But the true fermentation was I decided I wanted to learn how to make sauerkraut.
Yeah.
My aunt, who lives in Southwest Missouri, does it every year. And so when I was visiting, I said, can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
And she had like all the old school equipment, like this kraut cutter that she'd gotten at an antique market, an old crock. And we made a batch of sauerkraut. And unfortunately, it was during the season when I was having significant stomach problems.
Oh.
And I did not realize when I was making this that while fermented foods are amazing for your gut, they are not good for your stomach. And so I was not able to enjoy the fruits of my labors nearly as much as I should have.
Uh-huh.
So I got to try it again sometime.
Okay.
But that was my one. It was a wonderful, wonderful bonding experience, memory.
Yeah.
And watching her do it, you know, with layering the cabbage and the salt and the water and covering the whole thing over with whole cabbage leaves, you know, to seal the top.
Nice.
That's how she did it.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a wonderful, wonderful memory. So I hope others will be encouraged to try it as well, because it was way easier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
It's like the bacteria
Absolutely.
Do all the work.
Yeah. They do. Sarah, have you done anything?
No. And I can't eat fermented food either.
I know, I was just
going
to say, I'm betting this food is one that would definitely, even though you can eat cabbage.
I can eat cabbage,
you need to eat it fresh.
Fermented foods are an issue if you have histamine problems like I do. So unfortunately, I cannot enjoy sauerkraut anymore.
Uh-huh.
And my body probably never liked it, actually, because this has always been a problem for me. I just didn't know it. But boy, I grew up on sausage and sauerkraut. That was a staple meal.
Mm-hmm.
So sauerkraut is definitely like core memory childhood. I feel like that's really the only fermented thing I like, though. My husband, on the other hand, loves fermented food of all sorts. So there's that. I told him we were doing this episode and he was very excited.
Yeah.
He had fermented garlic on his meal last night in homage to what we were doing today.
Okay.
Well, and I hope at some point in this series, we will acknowledge the fact that if you enjoy beer, wine, or other alcoholic beverages, you enjoy fermented foods.
Exactly.
That's true.
I think a lot of people have made those and even more have enjoyed them.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the range of fermented foods is actually quite wide.
Yeah.
Vinegar is a fermented food. So if you have a salad dressing, that's a fermented food. Yogurt.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, I have made yogurt. I forgot. I've made yogurt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also really easy to do in an Instant Pot, I've heard. We haven't tried it, but there's yogurt buttons on those Instant Pots.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I chose to make sauerkraut, and I was intrigued by kimchi because they are such cousins. And the sauerkraut was much easier and what I would categorize as the success. The kimchi, it worked, but it was, there was something off with the consistency. I don't think I got the ratios right. It seemed too thick after I had let it. It wasn't the juiciness that I expected. And so I think I got my ratios off.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try it again and try a different approach and look at some more. Part of it is a lot of kimchi recipes call for just massive quantities. So I think in scaling it down, because I didn't want to commit to, you know, 5 gallons of kimchi, I needed to, it is a lot. I needed to scale it down. And I have a feeling I did something wrong in my scaling math.
Well, and that has been my experience, not with the sauerkraut, which I was doing with a seasoned expert, but with yogurt making. You can read instructions all you like, but until you actually do it, trial and error a few times, the technique is really, really hard to get down. And so, like, you've got to, committing to fermenting food is kind of a commitment. You're not going to hit it right the first time.
Yeah. So I did, though, I did also make sauerkraut, and it turned out I had it for lunch today and it was delicious. So the process at this time of year, I let it ferment for 2 weeks. As it gets warmer, I probably would be able to move it into my fridge before 2 weeks passed. But yeah, it was great. So I'm going to tell you the process I did, because it's the simplest of, it's basically more of a process than a recipe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the ratio that I used was 3 tablespoons of salt to 5 pounds of vegetables. And the process then is you chop your vegetables. Chop them fine, but you don't have to like mince them or anything. So I didn't even get out my mandolin for this. I just used a knife and chopped it thin. You add the salt, you squeeze it in with your hands.
Yes, like massage it.
Squeeze it good so that it's really all mixed in and you don't have sections that are salty and others that aren't. So squeeze it in real well. Then you pack it into your jar. I wanted to use, because I have tried using jars before for other things. I don't like when they have like those big shoulders, you know, where the top of the jar is in the middle and then it bumps out immediately.
Yeah.
Shoulders.
Yep.
So I found a jar that had more of a straight side. It still bulged out a little bit in the middle, but I thought that would be easier to get at. So I packed it in. I used like a big fat dowel rod. They make fancy things. I could have used anything, but I got a dowel rod and just used that to mash it down and really pack it in, because the enemy of fermentation is oxygen. And so you want it to be really packed in close. You don't want a lot of air pockets in it. So that's why you have to pound it into the jar. And you also, another way to ensure that it's, you know, protected from air is to have a layer of juice covering it. So you want the cabbage to be submerged in the juice. Rachel, your aunt's method of using a cabbage leaf, I did read about that. I didn't try it. And I think I would try that the next time.
Yeah.
Because I did find one that the weight that I had to improvise a weight.
I didn't have a
fancy weight for it. And it still didn't like fully cover it. And so it would have been nice to have something to sort of like put on top that would sort of help
because she said that the top can get a little gunky. So it's been a couple years. I'm trying to remember, but it was cabbage leaves, like 4 or 5 of them layered on top. And then she put like a concave dinner plate as a support for the weight to just sort of keep that whole top. And I think there was a clean tea towel involved underneath the plate.
More of that. Yeah. I tried different things. I was like, this jar looks like it's a really wide mouth, but a lot of things that I tried to work in there did not fit. I'm like, mm-hmm. I would have bet this would fit through that hole, but it didn't. So
that's the video we need.
Will it fit? So I tried a few different things, but I eventually got it and got it weighted down. And then after it had been fully weighted, now this, I went a bit off script, but I was like, yeah, whatever, I'm going to try it. I felt like it would be more important for me. Like, it seemed like it was really well jammed down at that point. It had been weighted for quite a while. And so I chose to remove the weight and then just put the jar lid on loosely. Mm-hmm. And so then I moved it into my basement because that was the coolest part of the house. So I moved it into the basement and I just was going to let it rest there. And I'll tell you, over like the next couple of days, I left it. And then I went down after about, I don't know, 3 days or so. And I was like, huh, where'd all the liquid go? So there had been a lot of juice. And then I'm looking, I'm like, there doesn't seem to be any more juice. And so that was a real puzzler to me. So I took, as we do in these modern times, I took to the internet and I tried to be very diligent because I was like, well, you don't want to mess with this. You don't want to poison yourself. You should find somebody that seems very knowledgeable. And so I did try and exercise good discretion and found somebody who was like, this sometimes happens. She's like, I've made so much kraut, and I could see that she seemed well regarded as an expert in the kraut making. And she said, just sometimes, she's like, nobody knows why, but some kraut, like the juice gets sucked back into the cabbage instead of remaining outside of the cabbage. And it's a mystery. And she said, as long as it's not molding, then you're okay, but maybe don't leave it for too long. And so I just sort of kept an eye on it because I didn't make that much. So I was like, well, she didn't think it was an immediate no-go, so I'll just sort of watch it. And after a week, I tasted it and it still seemed like it was good, but I was like, I'll let it go a little longer. So then this weekend was the 2-week mark. Mm. And I decided at this point I was going to move it into the refrigerator. And I tasted it and it was great. And there was no mold at all going on this kraut, which seems to be the primary enemy of it, is like
the
mold.
I really hate mold.
And so,
same.
Yeah. And so there was no mold growing. And so I was like, I'm going to trust that, you know, this expert was telling the truth. And yeah.
There we go.
That was my adventures with kraut. Oh, and I chose to add a flavoring.
Of course you did.
That's flavoring.
I have caraway and I thought about caraway, but I decided I looked at my other spices and I thought, I'm going to put, instead of caraway, I also really enjoy cabbage with, like, cooked cabbage with fennel and garlic. Ooh. And so I decided to put some fennel seed and garlic in.
That sounds good. Kraut.
My husband would eat that
delicious.
So fast.
Mm-hmm. Those are his favorite. I love it with caraway. That's sort of more of a Bavarian style.
Uh-huh.
But that what you're describing sounds really good. And now I'm going through in my brain thinking, what would I add if I were not going to do just straight cabbage kraut? Like, although I do like cabbage. Option. Cabbage is a great flavor. It needs no improvement.
It is.
It really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So basically, that's it. Like, it was the work of, like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes was at the 10, 15 minutes of active work. And then the rest was just waiting 2 weeks to eat it. But
that's pretty quick.
It was real quick.
I want to clarify something. Mm. Rachel, you have mentioned big cabbage leaves. And Aaron, you have said the lid loosely. Mm-hmm. How do you cap this so that nothing bad happens? Is it a loose capping? Do you put the lid on really tight? Do you leave it like sort of half uncovered?
I didn't want to put the lid on real tightly because, like fermentation, like there is carbon dioxide being produced. So I chose to just leave the lid very loosely on, figuring that would allow it to breathe as needed.
Yeah. So the technique that I learned, you do not actually cap it. The seal is maintained by the juice. And so you're going to keep that. So the cabbage leaves on top are meant to, in case there is any, you know, mold or something, that that's what's going to get it, not the precious kraut underneath.
Yeah.
And then you keep the weight, but you want to have that top cabbage leaf, you know, submerged a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're going to have the weight on top to keep everything. But no, you would not seal it up airtight while it's fermenting because gas release.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it needs air to grow. Those bacteria, they will suffocate if you seal them up.
Yes.
So that's what we don't want.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
The other piece, though, you probably don't want to just, you don't want to just leave it open either, because flies will get at it. And like,
that's so where the clean tea, clean tea towel came in for my technique.
Loose cover of some sort. You want to keep things,
which
out
I believe
of it.
Was changed every couple of days to make sure that it stayed clean. This is several years ago.
Seeing how it's progressing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
So keep it clean, but don't seal it up.
Yeah. So I intend to continue with my kraut adventures. I'm probably going to try kimchi again and decide either, yes, I'm willing to continue pursuing kimchi, or maybe this is just a product that I buy when I want it instead of making it. We'll see. I'll give it one more try.
Isn't kimchi traditionally made in a pit? Am I remembering that wrong?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different... Kimchi is a broad...
That's true.
...broad category. I don't think it's really made in a pit, but it is often made in very large quantities. Again, because kraut was also made in very large quantities, because you're like setting yourself up to survive the winter. So you're harvesting your cabbage and you're processing it all at once. And so a lot of times you are making kimchi in large quantities, again, to see yourself through the winter. Korea is a fairly cold country. Like, they're pretty far north.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fun.
I, as part of this episode.
Oh, right. We've got something else happening.
Yes.
Our dear friend, Andy Bates, who is my coffee hour co-host, I think he looked on the calendar. He was just checking out the calendar for recording and saw that we had something labeled fermented fun on the calendar. And he said, hey, can I make you a dish of stuff? A plate, a platter, a charcuterie, or something of fermented food for Aaron to try and guess and see what it is. And we said, sure, why not? Because Andy loves to just drop in randomly into our episodes when they relate to food, because food is his favorite thing. So Aaron has this platter of a variety of fermented foods. Which,
I'm so jealous right now, Aaron. Here I am half a country away, and I wish I could get in on this, because it looks great.
Yeah. We'll post a picture of it on our social and probably with the episode, so y'all can see what Erin is going to be attempting. Uh-huh. She does not know what everything is. So the point of this is for Erin to guess what she's eating.
I have to identify.
And
do you have the answer key, Sarah?
I have the answer key.
Oh, sweet action.
On my phone. Uh-huh. So...
Yes. Okay. I've uncovered. It's been
Andy
covered.
He made this with love, with so much love.
Arrangement.
He had much fun doing this. He had like things plugged into his office all day.
Oh my gosh, this is a whole meal.
It is.
There are four liquids. Another thing that's, I'm guessing it's going to be yogurt, but another thing in a cup. There are then three some sort of vegetable items. There is some kind of a noodle. There's an egg, which it's still hard boiled. It's still
egg
in a shell. I don't. We're going to find out.
That's
we're
so strange.
Find out.
All right.
So
that,
you're
that
looking
egg's
at the
be
answer key. Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, remember we said
one culture's highest culinary achievement is greatest nightmare. You're gonna find out.
So what are you trying first, Erin?
Okay, I'm trying first. It's a sort of a deep red.
Yeah.
And almost a beet red, but I'm guessing it's gonna be red cabbage.
That's a beautiful ruby color too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see. So I'm guessing it's red cabbage sauerkraut. It's sauerkraut made from red cabbage. But let's taste it. Mm-hmm. That's what I call that sauerkraut made from red cabbage.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know what it is?
Yeah.
It's fermented sauerkraut with beets.
So
with
you were right about the beets. Oh, huh?
Beets are thrown in for
the beets are the red.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess. As I look at it more closely, I do see that some of the strands are different shapes.
Oh.
Yep. There is a slightly different texture to some of the they all become almost the same color.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there is a difference in their texture. So, okay. Next, we have two things that actually both look like they are cucumbers. However, they are, I would say one is more of like a Persian cucumber, very skinny cucumber.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And the other looks to be a bit more of like the traditional fatter cucumber. Uh-huh. And they're also different colors. And so they both look like cucumber pickles, but let's taste them.
Okay.
So first is the pale one.
Got a nice crunch to it.
Has a nice crunch.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a zip to it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say that's a cucumber pickle, but it does seem a little bit like a little spicy. Maybe some garlic in there as well.
He did ask what your spice level was, but I don't have any spice information on here. However, that is a lightly fermented cucumber pickle. So there you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we have at first glance, at least, appears to be a cucumber, but it's
very
much darker, much darker and much smaller. And so smelling it. Okay. Oh, it's sweet.
Oh,
I was going to say, looking at that color, I said, I was thinking to myself, that looks like a gherkin to me.
Ooh.
Definitely in the Asian family.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely getting some soy sauce flavors.
Yep.
So I would say this is more of like a Japanese cucumber pickled cucumber with soy sauce.
Ding ding ding.
So
yes.
Oh, she's good. Good.
Yes. Okay.
But I mean, these were the easier ones. And then of course this has got to be sourdough bread, because sourdough is another fermented food.
Right. You're quite right. So, I forget about I've done sourdough too.
Ah.
How many fermented foods have I actually made?
Yes, I know, but I think
that is a very popular one. I think, aren't we having an entire episode on sourdough?
I think sourdough is one of the episodes. Yes. Okay.
All right.
So I'm torn. Should I do the egg now? Do I save the one I'm afraid of for last, or do I do it in the middle? So first, the egg is an unexpected color.
It really is.
It's like a grayish sort of a color.
Did you say it's in the shell?
Yeah.
It's in the shell.
Because I've had pickled eggs before, but they were unshelled. They were shelled, not unshelled.
Erin looks very unsure about this.
Honestly, when I tap on it, it almost, I don't think this is cooked.
I have no idea.
I don't think this is cooked.
I don't know.
I'm a little worried. Hang on. Balut? Is this balut?
A balut? I don't know what. Hold on. Googling.
Is this a Philippine
It is Asian.
Southeast Asian.
It's Taiwanese.
Taiwanese. Oh. Okay. I'm nervous. Surely he wouldn't. But anyway, it
it's Andy. He might.
He might. It just when I tap on it.
Do you want me to tell you what kind of egg it is?
Is it a duck egg?
It is a duck egg. It's preserved.
Okay.
He's unsure if it's fermented, but it's preserved.
It's preserved.
So close enough.
Is this a 100-year egg?
I don't know.
It's the balut that I'm thinking of has, it's an actual fertilized
yeah.
egg that is like has a partially developed.
Yeah.
And I don't want to open that if that's what it is. Okay, we're going to do it. We're going to take our chances.
How much air circulation is there in the studio?
I'll just move it out of the studio and then Andy can.
Because eggs gone wrong are not something you want in an enclosed space.
Yeah, one culture's.
Being so careful.
It's not raw. So I will say that because it's not cracking like a raw egg, but it definitely also is not behaving like a hard boiled egg. There are
adventures in physics
consistency.
There is a different consistency.
This is true. Oh, this is going to take forever to heal. Oh my goodness. I don't know. Like I'm feeling this and it looks like it's molded from the inside out. Like the white has the egg white has spots. It's like the part that was
that
making the
so
outside speckled was coming from the inside. Here.
Oh my God.
That is strange.
Uh-huh.
Now, is this an item that Andy has indeed put in his mouth previously or did he just.
I am not sure.
Okay, because not cool asking Aaron to eat something Andy won't eat.
I know. Watch this. When I push this, like the membrane like moves. It does move. It's disturbing. I don't know. I do love eggs.
I love that you're talking yourself into this.
I'm also messaging with Andy on Teams right now.
This membrane.
Is it a balut?
The inside. No, but look at the inside. It's fully black.
Oh, that is wrong.
This is the container it came out of. It just says preserved eggs.
Preserved duck eggs.
Andy loves duck eggs, by the way. So
has he eaten a preserved duck egg before?
I'm not sure.
Oh, the black part is translucent.
What? Oh, it is.
It's like a gelatinous.
It is.
It's like a gelatinous substance. I have read about these before, honestly. I think this is intended to be a 100-year egg, like a version
okay,
of a
I see you've got
egg.
A tiny sliver. Is that the bit you're going to eat?
That's the bit I'm going to eat.
Okay. Don't die, Aaron.
In this moment, I'm really glad I can't eat from instant foods.
It's not horrible, but I don't think you're intended to eat these just like a hard-boiled egg. I think this is intended to be more like a seasoning thing, like you use it in small quantities to flavor another item. I don't think you're just like cracking this open and powering down a preserved duck egg. I think it's intended to be like a smaller ingredient, not a thing. And I believe.
Oh, there's tea in it.
Okay. Like as part of the preservation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would explain the color.
But that doesn't explain the inside color. This is made, it's like made with like, might be lye or something. Anyway, it's like it's because it has to,
sodium hydroxide.
Change the protein. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, lye, duck eggs, lye, water. Yeah. Andy just sent me all the pictures of everything he put on here. So
like
now I have more information.
So that it's not a solid white.
Yeah.
And instead it's a translucent color like that. There's a chemical change. And yeah, you're not supposed to just eat these straight. So I did. I tasted it.
Duck eggs, water, sodium hydroxide, salt, and tea.
Yeah.
That's what's in them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's hope these noodles are better.
Oh, and I will just go back to the light pickle that you had. Uh-huh. They are hot and spicy. Okay. So you were right about them having some spice to them.
Okay. So next I have some noodles.
Oh, yeah.
Some sort.
Those look interesting.
Uh-huh.
Andy said to peel the egg first. We did do that.
We're not fools, Andy. Don't just bite into a eggshell.
I mean, I believe in making funny content, but that would be a bit beyond my usual comfort level.
That would. I'm curious if you find all of the flavors in that. Apparently, there's a lot going on.
Whoa. There really is.
It's apparently
really salty.
Oh, your face.
Is it very salty?
Yes. Okay.
Apparently you look like the noodles were going down really happy, and then you picked up a chunk of something.
This white chunk I thought was going to, it turned out to be like a more of a creamy consistency. Consistency I expected.
Like a cheese?
It seemed cheesy, but again, that doesn't fit with Asia, and these
Asian
profiles. So,
yep,
tofu. Mm-hmm.
I haven't ever had tofu of that consistency, and yet maybe
it's not tofu.
Hmm. So, what is this? Okay, hang on. There's like a harder item. Is this a plum?
Yes.
Okay, so we've got a preserved plum.
My husband bought some of those ones because his mother, who studied in Japan, loved them. And mm-hmm. I tried one. It was not my thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's very salty, very salty.
So yeah,
we've got a preserved plums. Plum.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to make of the white substance.
Uh-huh.
Are the noodles part of the trick? Are they like, are these like, I don't know, are these like tempa noodles or something like that? Or are they just regular noodles?
They are soba noodles.
Soba noodles. Okay. Mm. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Do you want to know what the white stuff is?
Yeah. What is the white stuff?
It is bean paste.
Bean paste.
Ah, okay.
No. So Andy says, go easy on the, bean curd. Sorry.
Well,
that's tofu.
Go easy on the bean curd. Wow, that is salty.
After I like took a whole chunk of it, just like popped that in my mouth. I'm like, what?
As somebody honestly, who often gets Chinese like, takeout with bean curd dishes, bean curd and tofu are pretty much synonymous.
They are, but tofu is not salty like this. Mm. This is something else. Mm. So it's like a friend, like a cousin of tofu, but this is almost, I feel like this is closer, like it's much creamier than miso, but it's more in like that direction as far as like the saltiness, because miso is very salty. So I feel like it's more in the saltiness of miso. Okay, I'm going to have a little respite with what has to be yogurt. Please. Yogurt. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely yogurt.
Do you know what's in the yogurt? It is yogurt. What's on the top?
Oh. That's also fermented?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh. I mean, it tastes like crushed up Oreos.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
No tricks.
Those aren't fermented. Oh, that was your reward for making it this far.
Yes. Eat all of that in case I need to come back to it at the end.
That's
yeah. Okay. And then I have four liquids.
Yes.
Is there an order that you think I should go in with these, or just go? I predict that this one, it looks cloudy to me. I predict it's kombucha.
Yeah, you'd be right.
This one is another cloudy one. And I'm guessing it might be, I haven't ever seen it as thin as this, but kefir is my first thought.
Nope.
Sake is my second thought.
Not that one, sake.
Okay. I haven't smelled these. I'm going just by looks, which then makes me think this one is sake.
That one is sake.
Definitely save that one for dessert.
This one is cloudy on the bottom. Surely it's not just straight apple cider vinegar, but no, that's almost what it looks like.
It's not.
Is this kvass?
I don't know what that is. Do you want to know what that is?
Not what you spelled. No, I got to taste it before.
Okay, taste it.
So we've got to give ourselves a chance to hone in. So, okay, I'm going to go with kombucha, which is not my favorite thing.
I love kombucha. You enjoy that for me, okay?
Ooh, this one is nice, though. It has a nice peachy taste.
Yeah.
That. It's like a peach kombucha.
It's passion fruit, orange, and guava.
Oh, not even peach at all.
Very tropical.
But still, my brain read it as peach in its first.
That passion fruit guava combo. Mm-hmm. That's kind of peachy.
Yeah, I can see how I could do that. Okay, let's look at this like cloudy white one.
I've never heard of this drink.
Smelling it, it just smells like a light smell. It's not a funky smell.
Oh, it's Persian.
Oh, is this Aryan? Aryan?
No, but it might be related. I don't know what that is either.
Mm. No, that's not what I was thinking of.
Oh.
I was thinking it's like, I think it's Aryan. Aryan. It's like a yogurt.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a yogurt?
It's a yogurt
this
soda.
Yogurt soda.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is lightly carbonated.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Dooch. D-O-O-G-H.
Dooch.
Traditional savory Persian yogurt soda. Actually, I should look at the picture Andy
this
sent me.
This one, I don't feel like it's savory. This one is lightly sweet. It's probably for export.
Delightfully satisfying.
There is, though, a yogurt drink that's like, I think it's called Aryan, which is very similar to like salty lassi, which is essentially like drinking yogurt that is not sweetened.
Oh.
And for a long time, I hadn't tried it because I was nervous and because everyone I had heard about, they were like, oh, yeah, Americans hate it. And then I realized I like plain yogurt, so I should give it a shot. And it turns out it's delicious.
Yeah. So that one, I just Googled it instead of looking at what Andy sent me. So my bad. But that one is actually Calpico soda.
Calpico!
Yes, which is Japanese
yogurt
soda.
Mm.
So there is a Persian variety of yogurt soda, but this one particularly is the Japanese cultured milk, sweet and tangy.
Yeah, one.
Calpico.
That one, I'm just going to tell people that I'm not going to say it on air because that's not who we are as ladies and ladylike. But there's a funny story about the pronunciation of that name. They have like changed that name for export. And this is a if you know, you know, sort of a thing for those who have spent time living in Japan.
Okay.
So this is actually, I think, my first time tasting it, but it was delicious. Okay, I'm going to try now the cloudy one.
Oh, yeah. I can see the sediment on the bottom there.
On the bottom.
Uh-huh.
Oh, not.
The smell is making your eyebrows go funny.
The smell is not what I expected. It's, again, has more of a, I feel like it's more in the Asian smells.
Mm-hmm. You'd be right.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of this is Asian variety, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This one was intended to be consumed hot, I'm betting. And
probably.
I'm predicting this is miso soup.
Yes.
Yes.
As soon as you said that, I was like, it looks exactly like it should. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That was probably one of the ones he had warming in his office and by now has gotten a little chilly.
Okay. And then we have the sake we discovered before. Hmm. Very nice. Very nice. Okay.
Well done.
Wow. I did pretty good.
I did
pretty good. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Quite accurate.
Wow, that bean curd. That was an experience. With the salty plums. Woo! That was a powerful experience. Okay, so anyway, ladies, any of you, if you happen to do your own fermentation, we'd love to hear your stories.
We would.
About your experiences with fermenting foods.
Yes. Successes and failures. Mm-hmm. And any science experiments you may have created. We will have more episodes in this series. Mm-hmm. It shall be fun. I am enjoying these. I was like, ferment. I don't know how fun is that going to be. It's very fun, actually. So here we are.
Yes.
Great fun. Mm. And very popular things for our ladies to be making in their kitchens, I think. So
yes.
We want to hear your stories. You can share those with us in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge, or on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can comment on our episode posts in both of those places. You can find all of our episodes at KFUO.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel, with special thanks to Andy Bates for the plate full of hilarity that he cooked up for Erin today.
Thanks, Andy! Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at KFUO.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at KFUO.org/give.